Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso, recording at our studio in the East County Wellness Center in El Cajon. Today, we open our show with major news about a judge's ruling that has overturned the county's approval of two major energy projects in East County and the reactions that's sparking across our region. On our sports report, we have some news about the number one Chargers fan known as the Bolt Man, who wants the city to sue on behalf of fans to keep the Chargers in town, and we'll tell you why he thinks the city can win. We also have news about a major player who's been re-signed by the Chargers team. If you have backyard fruits or vegetables, be sure to listen to our agricultural report today, since a fruit fly infestation has led the county to declare a quarantine in many parts of East County and San Diego. There's a big meeting coming up in Lakeside next week when the county will hold a scoping meeting on a proposed sand mining project in El Monte Valley, and we'll have details on how you can make your voice heard. From La Mesa, hear about a ferret fan who is leading efforts to get an initiative on the ballot to legalize ferret ownership. Our newsmaker interview today is with Dr. Richard Butcher, an El Cajon resident and Southeast San Diego physician who has just been named Practitioner of the Year by the National Medical Association. He'll be talking about how the Affordable Care Act has changed his practice and reforms he believes are still needed, as well as racial disparities in America's healthcare system. On Destination East County, we'll tell you about the most fun festivals and hot events coming up across our region, from a film festival in Julian to an opportunity to meet the editor of East County Magazine in Santee this week, as well as some exciting upcoming events, from music concerts and movies in the park to comedian Arsenio Hall taking stage in East County. We'll have all these stories and more, so stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters. The last of four major solar projects proposed by Soitec Solar and Boulevard are now dead. On August 7th, Superior Court Judge Joel Wolfiel overturned the county supervisor's approvals of Soitec's Rugged Acres and Tierra del Sol massive solar projects because the approvals violated the California Environmental Quality Act, the judge ruled. Soitec and the county failed to file an appeal by the August 14th deadline, says Donna Tisdale, chair of the Boulevard Planning Group and founder of Backcountry Against Dumps, a nonprofit citizens group which filed the lawsuit that ultimately halted these projects. Tisdale states, Soitec's Boulevard projects approved for 1,200 acres are now dead and buried. Any new projects proposed for those sites would need to start all over at step one, meaning a new environmental impact report, a lengthy and costly process. Tisdale says she has asked the county when it will set aside the voided approvals as mandated by the court now. Judge Wolfiel ordered supervisors to rescind and vacate their approval of the final programmatic environmental impact report and associated findings, as well as major use permits, a rezoning ordinance, and removal of the projects from an agricultural preserve. Soitec originally proposed four projects, two of which were approved by the county for construction, Rugged Acres and Tierra del Sol. But the financially troubled French company later announced it had exited the solar business, despite receiving $25 million in federal money for its solar manufacturing in Rancho Bernardo. Soitec sold its Rancho Bernardo facility to Concern Solar and withdrew its plans entirely for Tierra del Sol, but had sought to continue with the Rugged Acres project, or sell it. All of the industrial-scale projects planned for Boulevard drew strong community opposition over concerns that included destruction of meadows and wetlands, habitat and scenic views, as well as increased fire danger and depletion of groundwater for construction, among other concerns. One hydrologist at San Diego State had said that the groundwater needed for the projects would deplete groundwater supplies beyond what rainfall could replenish and could forever alter the ecosystem of the region. Only Supervisor Diane Jacob, who represents East County, voted against the Soitec projects in Boulevard. The other four supervisors voted yes. State Senator Joel Anderson, who has been named as a likely candidate to run against Supervisor Jacob in the next race, lobbied supervisors to support the Soitec project on Rough Acres Ranch, which is owned by the Hammond Companies, a major contributor to Anderson's campaigns. News of the project's demise drew reactions of joy and relief from some community members. In an email to East County Magazine, Tisdale wrote, We did not win on all counts in our lawsuit, but we did win in the face of extreme odds and undeservedly strong political support for Soytech. This was an especially sweet and gratifying win for us. Soytech's Boulevard projects were sanctioned by Governor Brown as fast-tracked environmental leadership projects to meet the state's renewable energy mandate, a process that Tisdale believes is undemocratic. The federal government granted Soytech $25 million for its Rancho Bernardo factory, and the state gave Soytech another $10 million for employee training. The city of San Diego expanded its enterprise zone and gave Soytech extra incentives and benefits. The County Planning and Development Services Planning Commission and four of the five supervisors all pushed the project through the fast-tracked environmental review, despite the experimental nature of Soytech's design. Tisdale says the county brushed off negative impacts to her community, as well as to public health and safety overall. Boulevard community members and planners previously spent 14 years, and the county had invested millions of dollars on a general plan update that was meant to keep rural communities rural and reduce development in fire-prone areas and those without enough water. Now, thanks to Tisdale's successful lawsuit, those lands will likely stay rural for the foreseeable future. Tisdale concludes, community involvement, determination, and due diligence paid off in the end, along with Soytech's timely self-implosion and decision to exit the solar business after SDG&E terminated its power purchase agreements. But she does voice one regret, stating, "Now if we could only get Soytech to pay back all the public funds they wasted." Howard Cook, the former chair of the Hucumba Sponsor Group, welcomed news of the court's ruling and appeal deadline expiring. "This is also a win for Hucumba," he told East County Magazine, noting that Hucumba Hot Springs Water District had agreed to supply groundwater for the Soytech solar project. Iberdrola from Spain, the developer of Thule Wind, and NextEra of Florida, which aims to build Hucumba Solar, have also sought water from Hucumba, as did Soytech. Cook asks why our precious groundwater supplies are being promised to out-of-the-country and out-of-state energy companies. News of the Soytech project's demise is also likely to bring cheer to many residents in Pine Valley, where shareholders in the Pine Valley Mutual Water Company have been seeking to overturn their water company board's decision to sell 5 million gallons of Pine Valley water for use at Soytech's now-defunct Rugged Acres solar project. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
How you gonna keep 'em down on the farm?
This is Ed Barreno with an agricultural alert. State, federal, and County of San Diego officials have announced that 93 square miles covering portions of San Diego City and East County communities have been put under quarantine after the discovery of four Mediterranean fruit flies, a dangerous pest that can infest more than 250 crops. Backyard gardeners are being encouraged not to move fruit they grow off their properties, but to eat it at home instead, while commercial growers, nurseries, wholesalers, and retailers will have to comply with quarantine requirements. The California Department of Food and Agriculture, United States Department of Agriculture, and the County's Department of Agriculture Weights and Measures are working together to eliminate the infestation. Agencies have already started dropping millions of sterile fruit flies, which have been used successfully to eradicate past infestations, and to treat properties within 650 feet of where the flies were found with a naturally occurring bacteria that is poisonous to Mediterranean fruit flies. The 93-square-mile quarantine area is bordered on the north by Prospect Avenue, on the south by Mount Miguel Road, on the west by Fairmount Avenue, and on the east by Vista Grande Road. The Mediterranean fruit fly infests fruit and vegetables, including apples, apricots, avocados, figs, grapes, grapefruit, lemons, limes, nectarines, oranges, peaches, pears, and tomatoes. It lays eggs inside that then hatch into maggots. Agriculture Commissioner Ha Dang said, "This invasive fruit fly is considered to be the most harmful agricultural pest in the world. Effective eradication measures help to safeguard the local food supply, fruit export, and the environment." Officials said that the four male flies were detected between July 22nd and August 4th. Agencies began releasing 15 million sterile fruit flies a week starting on August 10th. County teams helped state crews set more than 1,300 traps in the quarantine area last weekend. They continue to help monitor the infestation, and County Geographical Information System teams have provided maps to study the area and infestation. Quarantines for Mediterranean fruit flies last three life cycles after the last fly was detected. The fruit fly's life cycle is approximately 30 days. For more information, call the California Department of Food and Agriculture's Pest Hotline at 1-800-491-1899.
This is DeVario Bell with the Sports Report with good news for Chargers fans. The decision of whether the Chargers quarterback is going to be traded or stay with the team is over, at least for now. Phillip Rivers received a contract extension for 4 years, about $83 million. Chargers general manager Tom Telesco opened a press conference at Chargers Park by saying why their deal was reached. "We want Phillip Rivers to lead us to a Super Bowl win," said Telesco. "Rivers leads the San Diego Chargers with humility and character," at Telesco. Rivers acknowledged the importance of Chargers ownership in the process of getting this deal done. He says, "I want to thank the Spanos family for their support and commitment. It was suspected that Rivers didn't want anything to do with the Chargers moving to Los Angeles, but he cleared up such rumors during his press conference." He said his hesitation to sign the contract extension was due to the possibility of leaving San Diego more than a dislike for Los Angeles. When asked if there was a celebration for his contract signing, he said he ordered a pizza with his family. He later indicated that his children have been asking where they will live, adding the contract will do wonders for the expenses of his 5 daughters. After facing the possibility of uncertainty due to Rivers' hesitancy to sign a deal that could have lingered into the regular season and the preseason, Rivers now wants to prepare for the upcoming season. "I'm very happy that everything worked out," Rivers said. Rivers will be 37 years old when his contract reaches its 4th year.
Striking a blow for Chargers fans, Dan Jarigui, a local fan known as the Bolt Man, has fired off a letter this week to NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell and NFL Chief Legal Officer Anastasia Daniels. The letter contends that moving the Chargers to Carson is a violation of both the NFL Constitution's bylaws and the federal Sherman Antitrust Act. Boltman's letter states, quote, "Me and other loyal Chargers fans are prepared to spearhead an initiative to force the city to file a lawsuit against the NFL unless the league and the Chargers enter into serious talks to keep the team in San Diego," unquote. The Chargers pitched a plan for a shared $1.7 billion stadium with the Raiders in Carson near Los Angeles on Monday at the Los Angeles Sports Council's luncheon, after making the same presentation last week to NFL owners and Commissioner Goodell. But Boltman notes in a notice sent to media, "NFL policy requires a team to negotiate in good faith before a franchise can relocate. The league and the Chargers have failed to do that and have rejected every effort to keep the team in San Diego. San Diego's mayor, city council, board of supervisors, and city attorney have worked hard to produce a plan to approve and construct a new stadium on a short timetable as the Chargers demanded, only to have the team continue moving forward on its Los Angeles plans," the Boltman observes. Moving a team isn't only a blow to fans, it also means lost revenues and jobs for the San Diego region. So Boltman says he's prepared to take action to stop the move. "Unless the NFL and the Chargers come to the table for meaningful good faith negotiations on staying in San Diego County," Boltman says, "we will launch an initiative to have the city retain a team of experienced sports antitrust lawyers." In his notice to media sent on behalf of loyal Chargers fans, Boltman concludes, "We fans stand ready to act if the illegal behavior is not stopped. Rest assured, we will not give up the Chargers without a fight." Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Ed Barena.
We've been ferreting information out on proposed initiatives seeking to weasel their way onto the 2016 ballot. Now here's the scoop. La Mesa resident Pat Wright has proposed a ballot measure that would ask voters to legalize owning ferrets as pets. The legislature previously passed a bill that would have decriminalized ferret fans from owning the weasel-like animals, but Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger thwarted ferret owners by vetoing that bill. Now, California Attorney General Kamala Harris has cleared the ferret legalization initiative to start the signature gathering phase, so you can watch for petition gatherers at your local grocery stores or other public places. But it's still a steep hurdle for ferret aficionados to climb, since over 365,000 signatures are needed to qualify the measure for the ballot. The Sacramento Bee reports that Wright says he is baffled over efforts to block ferret ownership. "If you don't have ferrets, why do you care?" he asks. Ferret fans are fighting back with a website, legalizedferrets.org. They contend that bites are rare and that despite being legal in 48 states, ferrets have not run wild to wreak havoc in the environment as some had feared. This debate has turned heated at times. The Legalized Ferrets site contends that State Senator Joel Anderson from San Diego's East County here once accused a ferret lobbyist of a bribery attempt in his legislative newsletter. The group denies that any such action occurred. California isn't the only place where ferret ownership is outlawed. The state of Hawaii has banned them, citing fears of domestic ferrets being released into the wild and becoming invasive species. New York City also has a ferret ban. City health officials warned of vicious, unprovoked attacks by ferrets amid a failed effort by activists to overturn the city's ban. Ex-Mayor Rudy Giuliani once infamously stated on his radio show that, quote, excessive concern with little weasels is a sickness, unquote, and called ferret fans deranged. So the ferret fight continues, and California voters may soon have the final say. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
The county is preparing an environmental impact report on a controversial 565-acre sand mining project proposed in El Monte Valley. The first step in that process is to determine the scope of issues to be addressed. The county will host a scoping meeting on the project Wednesday, August 26th from 6 to 8 p.m. at the Lakeside Community Center. Examples of issues that might be included in the scope of an environmental impact report include impacts on wildlife, habitat, livestock, human health, recreation, scenic views, loss of agricultural land, air pollution, greenhouse gas emission, as well as aquifer and well water. Members of the public agencies and organizations are invited to attend the August 26th meeting in Lakeside and to submit your comments on the record. You can also send comments in writing to Jim Bennett at the County Planning and Development Services Department before September 14th. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Ed Barrena.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
Welcome to Destination East County with your host, Rebecca Williamson.
And Leon Thompson, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week. This week's Destination East County features singers and songwriters of the 60s, grape stomping at a vineyard, and movies in the park.
Plus, we'll have a preview of coming attractions, including a Native American powwow, a bluegrass festival in Santee, and Descanso's Deep Pit Barbecue.
So stay tuned for all of these events and much, much more. August 22nd, from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m., Lamplighters Community Theater presents The Supporting Cast, when Ellen, the wife of a successful author, writes a sizzling novel her friends are thrilled, until she invites them to her Malibu beach house and reveals that they are the characters. Written by George Firth, the Tony Award-winning author of Company, this lighthearted comedy is the theatrical equivalent of a fun and frothy beach read. Sparks fly when Ellen's friends see their warts and all their depictions in this tell-all book. But will they change their tune when they learn the book is being made into a movie? Lamplighters Community Theater is located on Severn Drive in La Mesa. For more information and tickets, go to lamplighterslamesa.com.
The 4th Annual Julian Film Festival will showcase environmental movies by up-and-coming filmmakers on August 21st and 22nd. This year's theme, A Watershed Year, focuses on the Volcan Mountain Range and related waterways in San Diego County and Baja. All proceeds benefit the Volcan Mountain Foundation's preservation efforts. For tickets and details, visit volcanmt.org.
Meet East County Magazine's editor, Miriam Raftery, at the Santee Library Tuesday, August 25th at 6 p.m. to share your ideas for new stories in Santee and Lakeside. You can volunteer to be trained as a citizen journalist. Community members and business owners are welcome. This event is free and open to the public, co-hosted by the Santee Solutions Coalition. There will be prizes and surprises.
Comedian Arsenio Hall of late-night TV comedy and movie fame will be performing on Thursday, August 27th at 8 p.m. in Sequan's Live and Up Close Theater. To reserve tickets, you can visit sequan.com.
The Heritage of the Americas Museum at Cuyamaca College is hosting a reception for a fine art show and sale, Plein Air Paintings of East County, featuring the work of artist Gloria Chadwick from 5 to 7:30 p.m. Friday, August 28th on the museum's tropical garden patio. The event is a museum fundraiser. The framed original paintings are priced from $150 to $300, with a third of the proceeds being donated to the museum. The plain art or in the air paintings were painted by Chadwick on location at various East County sites, including Alpine, La Mesa, Lakeside, Flint Springs, El Cajon, Harbison Canyon, Dehesa, Del Zura, Barrett Junction, Jamul, Hopatool, La Posta, Spring Valley, Santee, Casa de Oro, Rancho San Diego, Mount Laguna, Descanso, Tecate, Campo, Huimaca, and Pine Valley. For further information, visit the museum website at cuyamaca.edu/museum. Now for a preview of coming attractions.
Off-Broadway Live in Santee presents the 60s Singers and Songwriters on September 4th and 5th at 6:30 p.m. Take a step back in time to the supper clubs of Harlem and Manhattan, the food, the drink, the bands, and the music. And that's what Encore Supper Club is all about, but with a modern twist. Remember the sounds of the Righteous Brothers, Van Morrison, the Beatles, Petula Clark, the Mamas and the Papas, Dusty Springfield, Dionne Warwick, the Grassroots, Gary Puckett, Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons, Creedence Clearwater Revival, the Guess Who, and so many more. That's what this night is all about. The event includes a fully catered dinner and beverages. The live combo plays great dinner music. Then Bob and Steve, with musical guests, singing the songs of the best singers and songwriters of all time. Off-Broadway Live is on Cuyamaca Street in Santee. See more at offbroadwaylive.com.
The 45th Annual Barona Powwow will be held at the Barona Reservation Sports Park in Lakeside from Friday, September 4th through Sunday, September 6th. A grand procession will take place at 7 p.m. on Friday and Saturday, featuring representatives from all tribes participating. There will be competitions all weekend long, as well as craft and vendor booths. For more information, visit Barona/NSN.
Fall is harvest time at East County wineries across East County, and on September 5th, the Julian Grape Stomp Fiesta will be held at Mangini Winery from 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. There will be tons of grape to stomp, plus wine tasting from local wineries, food and craft vendors, and more. For tickets and details, visit julianca.com.
The 78th Annual Deep Pit Barbecue in Descanso will be held on Sunday, September 6th, hosted by Our Lady of Light Parish Church. The preparation starts the night before with the slow cooking of a seasoned beef using 2 cords of oak firewood. The Sunday barbecue and festival takes place starting at 11 a.m. on Sunday, also including crafts, games, and vendor booths, as well as prize drawings. For all the juicy details, you can visit churchbarbecue.com.
The twang of banjos and fiddles will again fill the air, while delicious food and beverages fill appetites at the 6th Annual Santee Bluegrass Festival on September 12th from 5:30 till 9:30 p.m. The one-night festival is a fundraiser that benefits local teen programs, park improvement projects, and the city's recreation scholarship program that subsidizes fees for less fortunate children, families, and seniors. The event takes place at Town Center Community Park East. This year's lineup features 2 talented bluegrass bands, Box Canyon and High Mountain Road. Admission includes wine and beer sampling, plus tastes of food prepared by local restaurants. This event usually sells out quickly, so organizers advise music lovers not to fiddle around. Tickets are available at the City of Santee's website or at Santee's City Hall. That's all for this week. You can find details on these events and more on our calendar and in our festivals and events section online at eastcountymagazine.org.
If you have an event you'd like added to our calendar, or if you would like to sponsor the Destination East County column on our website, or the Destination East County show on KNSJ Radio, you can contact editor at eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is the most read feature on our website.
We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around, East County.
The East County Magazine show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interests, not special interests. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, networking for social justice.
Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in the East County Wellness Center in El Cajon. And today, I am very honored to have Dr. Richard Butcher with us as our special guest. He has just been named the National Medical Association's Practitioner of the Year, and he's an El Cajon resident. Dr. Butcher, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Miriam.
Now, let's start with your East County ties. I understand that you are also connected with Granite Hills High School.
Yes, we've been here quite some time. I'm the team physician at Granite Hills for the last 40 years. Had several children that graduated from there also.
Very good. And you are also the president of CareView Medical Group, and I understand that that is a medical practice in Southeast San Diego. Tell us about your clinic.
Well, my partner and I, Dr. Rodney Hood, have been together some 25 years. Prior to that, I was with another group right in the same building. But we've just, the two of us have practiced medicine there. He's an internist and I'm general practice. I see everybody from the newborn all the way to the geriatric patient.
Very good. And I understand it's a very diverse practice, serving primarily Black, Latino, and Asian patients in the neighborhood.
Yes, we have a very diverse population.
And through the years, I know, I'm friends with your wife, Vicki Butcher, full disclosure here. I understand that through the years, you've had opportunities to move to a ritzy neighborhood, and you chose to stay right there and serve people in Southeast San Diego.
Well, Miriam, one of the things that I say, the physician-patient ratio in Southeast San Diego is 1 to 2,000 to 2,500. If you go to a place like La Jolla, it's probably 1 to 250. So the number of physicians and the number of patients, we're needed there, and that's one of the reasons why we stay.
Very good. What wonderful work you're doing. You are also a former president of the National Medical Association. Can you give us a little background about the organization?
National Medical Association started in 1895 when African American physicians could not join the AMA. It was important at that time to belong to a medical society because you couldn't put a patient in the hospital.
Wow.
So when the physicians then were taking care of patients, they would have to turn their patients over to their other colleagues that needed hospitalization. So there were several of the physicians around that put this together, and since that time, the NMA was born.
Wow, that's fascinating. It's come a long way since then, we hope. I want to read a quote that Lawrence Sanders Jr., the president of the National Medical Association, read when he presented you with this prestigious award. He said, "We believe that when the history of this dynamic period of struggle is written, your name will be deeply etched in the fabric as having inspired and challenged physicians and medical professionals nationwide to address critical issues of healthcare and medicine." That's amazing. Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you.
Now, you have quite a background. You were also the former president, I believe, as we mentioned, of the National Medical Association. And back during the Clinton presidency, Bill Clinton, you were instrumental in helping Mrs. Clinton, Hillary Clinton, draft up her healthcare reform efforts, I understand.
Yes, I was part of a team of medical professionals that came together in Washington. We met several times with her chief negotiator or chief person, Ira Magaziner. Mm-hmm. And I can remember those meetings well, flying in and spending a day or two and going over issues at that time and trying to point out issues from our standpoint of what we felt would be important to put in the bill.
I'm very curious, I'm sure our listeners are too, Mrs. Clinton's plan laid the groundwork for the Affordable Care Act, or what's known as Obamacare. What are some of the similarities, and what are some of the key differences? She is running for president. We talked to her. Do you have any idea of what else we might see?
No, I haven't talked to her, but one of the big things, I think that they both are looking at universal health care, something that I believe in and feel strongly that if we had that, that would make things better.
Yeah. And for listeners who may not know what that means, can you define the term universal health care?
It means that everyone has a basic right to have health care. So you have a basic level. So everybody would have some form of health care. Now, some people would have, because they would embellish their plan, would be able to get the Cadillac version. Others of us would be driving in the Volkswagen version, you know, so to speak. Yeah. And so, but everybody would be able to access. And to me, I think that it would take a lot of burden off of emergency rooms. Yeah. A lot of people go there for colds and coughs and cuts and things like that that we could take care of in our offices. But they don't have health care. A very interesting thing happened to me walking into your studio today. Met a young man that I had taken care of the family some 15, 20 years ago.
Really?
He was trying to get seen, but he said he didn't have any health insurance. He was working, but he needed an excuse so that he could get back to work. It would cost him to be seen in the urgent care clinic $125. Mm. And so he was asking, what could he do? I told him to go over to our office, see my office manager, and that we would look into what could happen.
Oh, that's wonderful, the way you reach out and help people like that. I'm very curious, since the passage of the Affordable Care Act and the healthcare exchange covered California that we have in the state of California now, tying in with that, how is that impacting your practice and the patients that you serve, Dr. Butcher?
Well, the biggest impact is obviously we're getting more patients starting to come in.
So they can actually afford to come in and get healthcare.
Right. And as I pointed out, we have an overburdened practice right now, but we're able to accommodate them and so forth. The biggest issue that I see is that a lot of these individuals have had a lot of medical issues for a period of time, and they'll come in on day one with a long laundry list saying, I need this referral, I need that, and so forth. Some of the things we're able to help them with right away, but some of the things we have to tease out and to take a closer look, making sure. And everything is not covered. Everybody thinks that just because now you have health insurance, that everything is covered. So we have to try to get them to understand that.
What are some of the areas where you would like to see further improvements made? Obviously, the Affordable Care Act has been very successful in that 41 million Americans who had no insurance now have at least some form of it. But, you know, there may be some shortfalls still in the program. If you could change things, what are some of the things that you think still need improving within Obamacare?
Well, part of the thing that goes on is that, one, as I said, it is not truly a universal system at this time.
No.
So I think that that would ease up some things. But barring that, there's things such as a general formulary. Formulary is the drugs that we can order for patients and so forth, so that when we have a patient come in, we can't get all of the things that we want to get, and that would be a good thing to have. And I think, once again, we would have that. The other thing that I think that has to be addressed is that we have to make sure that we're able to increase the total payment for some of the physicians.
Yeah.
We can't get some of our physicians that would take care of some of these patients, we can't make a referral because of the level of payment. So we're kind of handicapped there at times. So these are things that are being worked on. I think that it does have a way to go, but it's definitely a start. I was pleased with the Supreme Court's decision to finally say that it is legal and that we can go from there, and we hopefully won't have to spend time, money, and effort with trying to defeat an act that's already in place.
Right. There you go. What about making it a little bit more affordable for the middle class? It seems that what I hear a lot from people is that it's done a great deal for the people who could least afford it. And obviously the people at the very top, you know, can afford to pay more for the health care. But there seem to be a lot of people in the middle who are getting squeezed, where maybe they lost their insurance and all of a sudden, I know in my own case, I'm suddenly paying almost double what I was, which is a surprise to me, and I really can't afford it. But do you think that they need to maybe look at increasing
the limits a little bit on some of these things, or doing something to rein in the cost of premiums that insurance companies can charge?
Well, I think that they're working on that. Now, one of the issues that I think that has really been a blessing and a help that was not in the previous, you're talking about the differences, mm-hmm. but between Clinton's bill and the one now, is that you could carry your children on the health care, so that you could get health care for them.
Which is great. And that actually did help us. Both my kids, they stayed on all the way through college, and it also
right.
the getting rid of the pre-existing conditions, or they have to insure you, which is actually what happened to me. I had actually been dropped, and I finally got it again, but at a much higher rate. In California, the insurance commissioner tried to get something on the ballot that would say that an insurance company would have to go before him and justify the need for a rate increase, just like car insurance companies already have to do, homeowner insurance companies. They all have to do it, everybody except healthcare. And, the healthcare industry, the insurance industry spent a lot lobbying, and they defeated that. The voters actually voted it down. But do you think that's something that is needed and that would help more people?
I think it definitely would, and I think that that is coming. But mm-hmm. I think that what we have to do is to let the dust settle. We need yeah. to get this going, and then once we have that, then we can start moving to some of the other areas.
Yeah, that would be great. Let's go back to talking a little bit about the National Medical Association. You just came back from the national conference. Tell us about some of the initiatives they're working on. You've mentioned speaking out on some things that are related to the Black Lives Matter movement and how physicians can be helpful in that area.
Well, we're looking at all areas. I mean, obviously, disparities in healthcare was a big topic, but we talk on diabetes, we talk on cancer. There was an excellent program on triple negative breast cancer. Mm-hmm. It's a cancer that's undetectable because it doesn't hit the markers, but it's more prevalent in Black women and minority women.
Yeah.
It's also a higher morbidity and mortality issue. We talked on prostate cancer, again, higher morbidity, mortality. And when I say morbidity, mortality, it means that the patients are sicker and that they die at a higher number, and so on. So those are the kinds of things that we were talking about.
Heart disease,
mm-hmm. and so on. You mentioned the violence issue, and that's something
yeah.
that we've taken up and put a resolution in so that hopefully we'll get some action on that issue.
What would the resolution call for?
Actually, it's calling for some studies and some issues. We want them to look at, because the underlying thing, there's these specific various instances that go on, and you can look at one or two of them and so on. But we think that you've got to look at the whole problem, and that those issues do affect the health of individuals. And a lot of times that's overlooked and not understood.
Yeah. You mentioned also that the association is working on raising awareness of racism issues in healthcare. And you told us about a very disturbing study. Can you share that with our listeners, please?
Well, this study now is well known. It was conducted by the Institute of Medicine some 12, 13 years ago, where they took two sets of actors. One set was African American, the other set was Caucasian. They gave them the same script, so they had the same symptoms, the same medications, same backgrounds, and so on. And they walked in various offices and presented themselves with these issues.
Mm-hmm.
And when they analyzed the data, the African American patients got a lower level of care
wow.
in general. So it made no difference about the insurance, the economics, or the neighborhood, or those kinds of things.
So it was just racism.
Yeah, and I think it's institutionalized and so on. So that kind of went on.
You say that was 12 years ago. What efforts have been done since then to try to improve that situation? Have there been any further studies to see if it's successful?
Well, they're still looking at that, and they're still doing issues. The NMA, National Medical Association, has been very active and supportive. The Institutes of Medicine is also continuing to look at it. So this is still being addressed.
I understand that during the Obama administration, at one point, you were actually on the short list of possible candidates to be the Surgeon General of the United States, Dr. Butcher.
I don't know how short the list was, but my name had gotten mentioned, and I did get some inquiries and had to do some things, but they finally selected Regina Benjamin, who I know, an excellent physician.
Well, it begs the question, if you were the Surgeon General someday and you could wave your magic wand, what do you think the most important changes are that you would make to improve public health and the health of all Americans?
Well, the one thing, and I think it just goes back to what we were talking about earlier, it would be good for everybody to be able to have medical care, for people not to have to use emergency rooms for just routine things.
What would you say to those, you know, on the other side of the political aisle maybe, who would say, how do we afford that? You know, it sounds great, but it would cost a lot of money, wouldn't it? What's the answer?
The thing, and I've looked at that and I've had that question asked. The big thing that medicine or medical care is not a simplistic thing. So the costs have been going up. Now they're starting to level off. And if you do something like this, you're going to have to put some money in now. But the thing that I look at is down the road, 50 years from now, if we do all of this. I mean, take one example of a big topic that everybody's looking at, obesity in children.
Yeah.
And we have a high incidence of obesity in our community, in the African-American community and other minority communities. One, because of the foods that they can get in their neighborhoods. So there are a lot of social issues and so forth.
Right.
But if we really put a lot of effort in that, 50 years from now, we're going to see less hypertension, less cholesterol problems, less heart problems. And so by doing that and then moving forward, that's where the payoff will be, and then it'll cost less.
Yeah, we're certainly seeing a lot more emphasis on preventative care with Obamacare, and even at the county level, they have their Live Well program. So are we seeing some improvements even right here at the local level on that?
Well, I think so, and we do have some initiatives that we're doing both as a practice and foundation that Dr. Hood and I put together that's working on some things.
Very good. Also at the National Medical Association Conference, you mentioned there was a lot of talk about this being the 50th year of Medicare. Would you like to comment on that?
Yes, I would. I'm very proud of that. The National Medical Association signed on with Lyndon Johnson at the time, who's president, and they signed the bill making Medicare and Medicaid a national law. And they pointed out, we have a picture of President Johnson with two of our presidents and signing off on the bill. And one of the presidents I just spoke to, he's from St. Louis. He didn't make the meeting. He's going to be 100 in a month, Dr. Whitico. So he was pretty happy about that.
And that certainly has improved the health care quality, I think, for all of the seniors in America who can qualify. In fact, I've sometimes wondered if they need some kind of bridge program. It seems like the people that are being hurt with the premiums going up and up mostly are the older folks that aren't quite, you know, everybody I know that's like 55, 60. This seems to be the issue right now, unless you're very low income and can get those subsidies through the Obamacare. But for the rest, do we need something else to maybe help the people between 55 and 65? What's the answer there?
Well, I don't have a good answer, but I think that definitely some help needs to be there. And as you know, they're going to have a large influx of this age group coming in.
Yeah, baby boomers.
Yes, there is. And that's, once again, why we need to address these issues. You shouldn't have to say, am I going to pay for this medicine or get something to eat? And a lot of times—
Yeah, or lose my mortgage or pay for my health, you know, my health care premium. It's just crazy the way that private insurance is going up and up.
And that affects the overall health. A lot of times we'll have a patient coming in and she said, "Doctor, I couldn't get that medicine because I couldn't afford it." Or, mm-hmm. "You told me to take it twice a day. I'm only taking it once a day so I can stretch it out. And I'm looking at my lab test and I said, this is the reason why we're not getting to goal where we want to be." And yeah. So we need to keep working on that.
Well, there's certainly been some improvements in the Medicare program. And one of them that we just wrote about was, you know, the outcomes of some new requirements under Obamacare for Medicare for the hospitals to meet, where they have to start reporting those negative outcomes they have, like if, you know, patients have to be readmitted too much or they're getting too many infections or things like that. And what we've found is the ones locally, at least, we profiled one hospital where there had been some fines for some of that. Now all of a sudden, guess what? The new reporting period is coming out and they've improved that record a whole lot. So I think we're seeing improvements in patient safety, patient outcome, less money spent on readmitting people and probably less deaths even from some of these complications, thanks to some of those improvements in Obamacare for the Medicare program specifically.
I think so, and it trickles down. It affects all of the care and so forth. Mm-hmm. One of the things that has gone on with our multicultural, and I mentioned the foundation that mm-hmm. My partner and I started, there was a program that looked at the people who had to go back to the hospital a lot or to the emergency room a lot. And we got a grant from CMS to do a study on that top 1% of those patients. Hmm. And it was very interesting. The one thing that I can tell you is that there was one individual who they enrolled early on. She had been to the hospital 3 times during the previous year. She had had 8 or 9 emergency room visits. And when you start adding up the cost of all of that, you can understand. What they did and what this PMMI team did, they have a physician, they have a nurse, they have a social worker, they have a patient advocate, mm-hmm. and they have some other volunteers. They literally go to the patient's house, deal with them,
wow.
deal with all issues of
the old-fashioned days of doctors that made house calls.
Well, it's a little bit more than mm-hmm. that, but transportation, yeah. getting their medicines, getting their visits, and during the 9 months that she was enrolled into the program mm-hmm. had only been to the emergency room 1 time.
Wow. Well, that's wonderful. And that, again, listeners, is through the Multicultural Health Foundation.
Now what we're concerned with, because the federal grant ran out and we're starting to look for private partners to help to keep this going.
And this is a community-based group that's devoted to addressing health disparities right here in San Diego.
That's correct.
Very good. I'd like to talk about one other thing, and that is that I know that you are also very active in the nonprofit Water for Children Africa that you co-founded with your wife. I think a few of you may know her name, Vicki Butcher. She was a former congressional candidate out here, and she's served on the El Cajon Planning Commission for a lot of years, among other many accomplishments that she has. Tell us a little bit about the Water for Children Africa nonprofit and the good works that you were doing there to help people across the world.
That all started, Miriam, in my presidency, 92, with the National Medical Association. As president, you get invited to go and to do a lot of things. Mm-hmm. And so I got an invitation to go with Dr. Sullivan over to Africa. I couldn't take off and go, and the executive director said, because my wife has always been interested in Africa and had gone several times, "Well, you can go, Vicki." And so she went, and she said, "If I go, I'm going to do what things are needed health-wise." And she got involved in this project, and now it's been going for 20 years.
So tell us exactly what they do.
Well, what they do is to send teams over to get safe, sustainable water. Now, initially, they were looking at the wells, but that was very expensive, mm-hmm. and now they're looking at just water collecting systems. She currently has a machine that gets water out of air.
Yeah, and we had her on, did an interview about that a few months back. It's
right.
an amazing technology.
And so those are kind of things. And then they go over, they take teams, and always on the team, they have young people to go. Several of my children and grandchildren have gone. Mm-hmm. And they team up with a community base in the African village. Mm-hmm. And we're not talking about going to the big cities, Johannesburg or things yeah. like that. They're going into rural areas, and it's all over the entire continent. And she's wow. gone to about 15 different places there and so on. And so they do this, and now they're putting in latrines. They're working on hand-washing things, mm-hmm. talking about HIV.
So you bring medical supplies and medical information, too. It's more than just the clean water, however important that is.
Right. But the water is the main focus.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, it sounds like you're doing wonderful work in just so many areas, Dr. Butcher, between your CareView Medical Group and the Multicultural Health Foundation and the National Medical Association, of which you've just won this Practitioner of the Year award, as well as Water for Children Africa. I'm going to let you have the final word here. What else would you like our listeners to know that I have not specifically asked you about?
Well, the thing that I'll just kind of tie up everything. What I said when I accepted the reward, I said there's a simple mathematical equation. The whole is equal to the sum of its parts. And I said, I, as the whole, am accepting this award for all of the parts. I mentioned Mamie Scott, my grandmother, Alger and Margaret Butcher, my parents, mm-hmm. my children, Richard, April, Kelly, Langston, and Crystal, my grandchildren, my educational system, the Cleveland system, Allegheny College, Meharry Medical College, the National Medical Association, my partner, Dr. Hood, and my wife of 51 years, Vicky, as mm-hmm. being the parts that made the whole. And I said, I couldn't be here without all of those parts adding something to my life and my situation. And I'm thankful for that.
And you also teach a Sunday school class at Bethel AME Church.
Yes, I do. I enjoy that. And I have my grandson, Jordan, who's a senior at Granite Hills High School, playing volleyball and soccer. He's one of the students that comes in, and I make sure yeah. that he reads the lesson.
You know, Bethel AME Church, of course, had that terrible tragedy with the shooting in North Carolina. Has the National Medical Association taken steps since then to do anything to try to reduce violence targeting the African-American community, including, I should add, police violence, because we've certainly seen a lot of that attention drawn to it through the National Black Lives Matter movement?
Yes, yes, we have. And what we're doing is trying to put together various commissions, study groups, things of that nature, so that we can really understand this better. Matter of fact, toward the end of the year, the Multicultural Health Foundation, with this issue, is going to have a big conference in Southeast right next to our office. And I'll get that information to you because it's still in the formative stages. But mm-hmm. we feel that it has an impact on medicine and medical care. In other words, my partner has a talk on something called post-traumatic slavery disorder.
Interesting.
And what he says is that by having all of this and living with all of this, that when you come in, does your blood pressure reflect this? I mean, you might not say mm-hmm. it's due to that, but when we see, besides giving you all the medicines, the blood pressure staying up, is that part. And there are some things that he's working on and some discussions. And so we feel that we need to look at that, we need to tease this out, and we need to stay on top of it.
Yeah, very, very important. We've been speaking with Dr. Richard Butcher, a San Diego physician and El Cajon resident who is the recipient of the Practitioner of the Year Award from the National Medical Association. Dr. Butcher, congratulations again on that tremendous honor, and thank you for joining us on the East County Magazine show on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice.
Thank you very much.
Uber is partnering with Life Reimagined, a subsidiary of AARP, to hire active seniors to become partner drivers. Nationally, Uber says it needs to add hundreds of thousands to its workforce, so Life Reimagined will offer workshops across California and information online to get people started. Adam Sohn with AARP calls the two organizations a natural fit, since the ride-sharing app allows seniors to monetize one of their biggest assets, their vehicle.
We thought that would be a really positive opportunity for people in the life reimagined community to earn additional income, to be more self-empowered, and maybe starting their own business by just taking their car out of their driveway.
Uber says more than half of its current drivers are over age 40, and 24% are over 50. To qualify to drive for Uber, you need insurance, a clean driving record, and a car that is fewer than 10 years old. Sohn says studies show that older people are more careful on the road than younger drivers, making them ideal candidates to drive for Uber.
Uber is also excited about the level of engagement from these more experienced drivers and the level of safety that passengers will enjoy.
Part of the new agreement is that drivers who sign up for Uber through Life Reimagined get a $35 bonus after they complete 10 trips. Information is on either the Uber or Life Reimagined websites. For Public News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
This is Eberena with a public service announcement from San Diego Gas and Electric. SDG&E has issued a reminder to the public about the importance of calling 811 before you dig. Last year, nearly 283 natural gas lines were damaged by third-party contractors or residents digging, which is an increase from that same time period in 2014. Calling 811 or Underground Service Alert will help avoid possible injury or damage to hidden gas lines or service interruption. Scott Ferguson, Vice President of Gas Operations at SDG&E, states, "Damaging a natural gas line can pose a significant safety risk and disrupt natural gas service. We ask everyone, whether digging at a construction site or at their homes, to make a quick 811 phone call to Underground Service Alert to have utility-owned lines marked for free. Before digging, residents, business owners, and contractors should mark the proposed excavation area and call 811 at least 2 business days before the project is scheduled to begin. Underground Service Alert will contact all local utilities for free to have them locate and mark the underground lines, pipes, and cables they own. For more information about safe digging or to submit an online request, visit digalert.org. If you suspect a gas emergency or have questions regarding a gas odor or carbon monoxide, call SDG&E immediately at 800-411-7343. It's important to keep in mind that natural gas is flammable and that something as simple as a spark can serve as an ignition source. Use your sense of sight, hearing, and smell and any of the following signs to alert you to the presence of a gas leak. Look for the following: dirt or water being blown in the air, dead or dying vegetation over or near pipeline areas, a fire or explosion near a pipeline, exposed pipeline after an earthquake, fire, flood, or other disaster, and bubbles in puddles outdoors after a rain. You should listen for an unusual sound such as a hissing, whistling, or roaring sound near a pipeline, and you should smell for the distinctive odor of natural gas. However, although SDG&E adds a distinctive odor to natural gas to aid in the detection of leaks, you should not rely on your sense of smell alone to determine if you have a gas leak. For more safety information, visit sdge.com/safety.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the East County Wellness Center for our studio space, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technicians, Leon Thompson and Ed Berena, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Donnie Gentile, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jules, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, and Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road. We also thank the County of San Diego for a community enhancement grant to support our Destination East County segment. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.